This is the Faith Ventures Podcast, a project of the Libertarian Christian Institute, telling stories of Christians doing business for the glory of God. If you appreciate this program, support the nonprofit work of LCI by donating at libertarianchristians.com/donate. And if you'd like to share your story, contact us at podcast@libertarianchristians.com. Welcome back to Faith Ventures. I'm Dr. Norman Horn, and today we are so honored to have with us Mr. David Bahnsen. David Bahnsen is a really interesting gentleman who has a great theological pedigree as well. So very pleased to have him on board. He is the founder of the Bahnsen Group and is here to talk with us about his perspectives on the nature of faith and work and investment. So David, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, I'm just pleased as punch to have you on board. I've read recently and was introduced to your writings through the Institute for Faith, Work, and Economics. You're good friends of ours. I know that you're also involved a bit with the Acton Institute. And so it's been really cool to learn about your perspectives, and I'm so glad that we're able to talk about that today. I want to start a little bit with describing your career journey. And how did you get from being, you know, really like you're the son of a theologian and preacher, and a pastor, you have a really interesting history there. How did you go from there to getting into investments and becoming really the founder of a big time investment group?
Well, it's a interesting path, and it's been filled with a lot of blessings and success stories and things that I'm very grateful for. But it's been filled with, including the way that it all started, some hardship. There were tougher parts of the journey, and that's the way life goes. Is it's a mixed bag. There's periods that are really wonderful to go through, and periods that are not. But you know, my story can't really be told without the genesis of my adult life being the passing of my father. And so, you mentioned that being the son of a theologian, and he was. He was a Christian intellectual, philosopher. He was my pastor. On a personal level, he was my best friend. He was my mentor. We had a extremely close relationship. I shouldn't say never, because I'm sure at younger ages there were times that I thought about going in that footstep. But at the time he passed, I wasn't ever very interested in becoming a career theologian per se, even though he was such a big influence on me. But you know, for me, I didn't really have the luxury of thinking, well, what do I want to go about doing to make a certain career dream come true? I was orphaned and broke, and so. The immediacy was much more pragmatic to try to, you know, figure out how I was going to make my way in this world. And then, of course, that had the natural economic realities that go with it, but also the kind of existential, you know, yearning for what I wanted to do in my life and trying to get answers to the questions that I really wanted him to be there to help me answer, and he wasn't. So it led me down a journey of going through the doors that were open and trying to figure a lot of this out. And I worked very, very hard. And I happened to have some friends that were in bands at the time. And I began managing Christian music artists and turning it into a company. And then I said I worked hard, but I really poured into that and ended up in my young 20s building a pretty successful business and having offices in Nashville and in Southern California where I lived. And I did that for a while. And at the same time as I started doing better financially, you know, I was obsessed with the stock market and yet didn't really believe I had a path to go into the financial world. You know, I never went to college. And so it was because of dad dying and so forth, there was just a lot of things that kind of went quickly and went the way they went. And so as it turned out, I ended up selling that company and I worked with musicians for, I think the Bible says God won't make you do something longer than you can handle it. And I was done working with musicians. And some of them are, you know, some of my best friends to this day. So I tease a little bit, but You know, I did that for a good period of time. I learned a lot. I went through a lot, and it sort of became my substitute college years. But I also developed a lot of self-confidence that I could take risks and do something. And then I had a couple bucks in the market, and I said, I really want to go develop a career in finance. And so at that point, you know, I had been successful enough as a small business owner. I was able to get hired at a Wall Street firm, went into the business as a trainee, started totally from scratch. And, you know, 25 plus years later, here we are.
Well, there's got to be a lot of details in there too, and we can unpack some of that if you like. But you know, it can't be understated, of course, as you mentioned, like how important it is how our parents affect the way that we view our career trajectory, what the types of things that we view that are important in our life. And I know you've written, you know, plenty about that, and we don't need to get into all of that, but. I guess where I want to head next, though, is to kind of identifying, you know, okay, so you've been involved in Christian music, you've got into finance, but there had to be moments along the way in which you probably had to make big decisions, and your faith had to play a role in that. Could you identify perhaps like what are some of those those big moments where you realize something new about what it meant to be a Christian in the workplace, or what sorts of things come to mind there, and perhaps related to, you know, what you learned as a young man and what you're still learning now?
Yeah, I'm not sure that there's ever been a moment that I didn't see my faith as heavily connected to what I was doing vocationally. I think that the depth of what that means has evolved for me over the years. Right. I do think that in that Christian music world, there was a tendency for some people to believe they just sort of worked in music, but they could sprinkle some Jesus verses on top and call it Christian. And that never was exactly what I believed it to be. But largely because of my upbringing, you know, I always did feel a certain theological commitment to the idea that our work had much deeper meaning, that there were standards we were to have. A lot of Christians will talk about how, you know, to really bring your faith to the workplace means to do your work with integrity and with character and with ethics. And I agree with all of that, but I gotta say, I think it means a lot more than that too. I would like to think that saying like, I do my work as a Christian, I don't rip people off, is a pretty low bar.
That's a pretty low bar, yeah.
you know, and having some, you know, type of ethical standard and whatnot, that's all very important. But yeah, I mean, I've been very self-consciously committed to the idea that the work itself intrinsically matters. And so my faith is not merely, I mean, I don't know, it's not excluding this, you know, relying on God when you are having anxiety. I mean, trusting God when things are tough, you know, needing wisdom to make good decisions. Like all of those things are vitally important. And I think a lot of believers do that. I would just simply say that for me, it also meant never believing that the work was merely a means to an end, that my faith did not allow for that belief, that I just did the work so I could put food on the table and go home and do other things that mattered. I did the work because the work mattered. I do the work because I believe that there is something deeply meaningful in the actual activity of, you know, in my particular case, stewarding finances, using capital markets as a means to an end, you know, entrepreneurial endeavors. The stuff that I do, I believe, is really important as a created being, and that's where my faith and career intersect.
Yeah, I love that, and I think that where God has been kind of working on, even in my life a little bit on that, is even realizing that like the things that some things that we don't necessarily think of as worthy work really are, and even the, like, for instance, just a discussion of investment itself is a way in which we are expressing work. And so how we how we behave around that, what is our philosophy around that, really kind of does matter. And it, at the very least, we need to be thinking about that. And so that's where I'm kind of curious as to like, how is that a approach and thinking about money itself and whatnot? Does that enter into, you know, your own kind of philosophical musings or way of being, way of thinking, way of working in the financial services sector like you are now?
Do you mean how I think about money as a matter of, I guess I'm trying to understand what you mean particularly.
Okay. So what I mean is that sometimes we might say, oh, well, what I'm doing, say like I'm an engineer on a day-to-day basis. That's my main job. Right.
Yeah.
So now I can say the work that I'm doing there, that's my worthy work. And that's where I'm expressing the dominion mandate and that comes to us from Genesis and so on. And that, so I'm doing that, but whereas like, oh, my investments are not really me expressing work in any particular way. Mm. But there's something, you know, worthwhile and different that comes about when we begin to look at other aspects of how we behave or use the resources that we have to accomplish goals in the world, which is joining up in God's project and creating something with exterior to us. So that's where I guess I'm going with that.
Well, I think that it would be understandable that a lot of believers would not view their investments as contributing to that project the way that their own work does. First of all, too many believers don't even believe their own work contributes to it.
Yeah.
But I think that there's so many Christians that don't necessarily have that kind of basic understanding of how economics works. Mm-hmm. To see what their investments themselves are doing. They tend to personalize the investment, which is very understandable. They don't own Apple stock to help Apple. They own Apple stock to help themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're getting a return on their investments that they plan to use one day for their kids' college or for their own retirement or something, you know, they're viewing their money as that means to an end. And I get all of that.
Yeah.
But I think that it is becoming increasingly important that people understand why these investments generate a return.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you may be an engineer and then have your own investments, but the investments into other engineering companies or into Apple or into whatever are themselves capital being put to work in mm-hmm. pursuit of a return. And the return comes from that enterprise, which is run by human beings, producing goods and services that serve other human beings. And if they don't, then that investment doesn't give a return. So the believing you just have kind of a portfolio of stocks or funds, even believing the money sitting in the bank, getting interest or buying treasury bonds, even just believing that interest just sort of comes from nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's just because Christians don't often think of, and a lot of people, Christian or otherwise, don't think about the way this stuff works, that the only reason that that money even earns interest is because somebody is doing something to get a yield, to get mm-hmm. growth, to participate in God's project. If the money is being lent out and someone is using it to buy a home, to start a business, to start a warehouse, there is a return that comes from these activities, these enterprises, these mm-hmm. endeavors. Those returns work their way into our finances, whether it be in our stock accounts, our bond accounts, our savings accounts, our retirement accounts, and all of it, whether we're actively involved, like in our work as an engineer or an artist or a financier, or in our passive just ownership of these things that generate returns for us, all of it is essentially centered around human action as created by God.
Yeah. And I think that that's like a kind of a crucial perspectival change that a lot of Christians need to encounter as they begin to think about how should I be interacting with the world, especially as it pertains to, well, government action and whatnot, because the way in which the state often, you know, affects economics is really crucial. And we tend to have an overly simplistic way of approaching these sorts of things. It may be that we have just foundationally wrong, like interpretations of the Bible, like the money is the root of all evil, which we know is the misquote, of course. But then also just not understanding the nature of what markets are for and how they work and why Christians should participate in them as part of our worthy work that we do. And that's why I love talking to folks like yourself in the kind of financial sector, because that is arguably maybe the most misunderstood amongst Christians as to how it works, why it's important, and why it is that they're crucial for the operation of a free market. And you highlighted a few of these aspects in terms of, it's like, you need to understand how these securities or the stock market, how these things work, in order, like how they function, in order to understand the inner workings and why they're here better. You enumerated some of those aspects, and I kind of want to kind of transition to, like, what other aspects have you seen in the marketplace like this that you feel that Christians may misunderstand, and that, or that you often have to explain to people? I'm curious, because those are the types of things that we at LCI also are trying to help educate people about. And that's why we have this podcast, for instance. So you've talked a little bit about that. I want to kind of give you that and see where we want to go.
Yeah, I think that when it comes to economics, the list is so long, we'd end up being here for hours. And it's not necessarily things that they believe A, but the answer is not A, or believe X, but the answer is Y. It's often that there's just a certain lack of self awareness, mm-hmm. and a lack of kind of deeper intentionality or consciousness about some of these things. And I don't think it's unique to Christians, but I do think it is more inexcusable for Christians. I think Agreed. That these things are such intrinsic parts of creation that it's incumbent upon us to understand it. And so a lot of it is just the grammar of the way we talk about this stuff is incredibly important. Markets are themselves a good word, and people will say things sometimes like, well, I don't want to bow, you know, at the altar of markets. You know, yeah. We need to do the right thing. This isn't about markets. And I always wonder what they mean by that. What is it that the market is asking them to do that is wrong? The market may be not asking them to do something good or bad, but the market represents a sort of amoral forum of exchange, and then they bring their immorality to that forum. Yeah. And if they're doing the right job, they would bring their morality to it. But the market is merely this thing that was not imposed by the state. Mm-hmm. It was created essentially as a forum for social interaction and commercial exchange so that we can produce the goods and services that enhance our quality of life. It was, by the way, created before sin entered the world. And so when we understand that what we refer to by commercial society or by market activity as humans freely acting, mm-hmm. humans freely exchanging, I think it gives a really important theological base to better understand economics. And so I start there. A lot of Austrian and libertarian and classical economists would agree with everything I just said, but not rooted to the same anthropology, not rooted... Right. to the same understanding of mankind, rooted to a certain secular rationalism about mankind. And I don't think that's as compelling, and I don't think it gets us to the truth claims that I want to get to that are important. But yeah, I think that when it comes to economics and understanding human purpose and human activity and becoming very comfortable with scriptural language about ambition, about aspiration, mm-hmm. About how wealth is created, about what wealth really is, about the guardrails around it, about avoiding idolatry, about avoiding arrogant reliance on self. There's so much that can be unpacked. But believers have a funny way, I've noticed, of cherry picking the parts that they're most comfortable with. And they often tend to be the things that are most comfortable or convenient or aligned with the kind of life they already have. And I think a lot of our understanding of economics needs to challenge us to maybe think bigger.
I love that. And so what are some of the ways that you would want to challenge people to kind of think bigger than where they currently are? I'm going to seize upon that immediately because I like that, you know, because that's certainly what we want to do at LCI, is to like challenge us to think bigger about how we think about our interactions in civil society, and not just taking, you know, the typical worldly wisdom for granted and just saying that that's it.
Well, you know, there's a lot of times that a believer needs to leave their office or their factory or their workplace at the end of the day and go home and be a dad or be a father or be present with their family. But what Christians love to do is talk about it in the context of, I'm not worried about the paycheck, the bonus. I'm going home now and leaving my selfish career ambitions behind so that I can be a better person. But if you believe, now maybe some people don't, or maybe some people at their work, they're out exploiting people and taking advantage of them and stealing from mm-hmm. them. And if they are, they should stop doing that because it's wrong.
Yeah.
But if and what they're repent. Doing, but if what they're doing is serving others and mm-hmm. they understand the fundamental intrinsic value of the work and of the economic activity and those who are being served in the work, you can say, I have to go home now because it's dinner time, because my kid needs help with homework, because I'm going to be back in early tomorrow to continue what I'm doing. That's all good. I'm all for understanding the way in which we sort of juxtapose the various responsibilities we have. Mm-hmm. However, to word it as I'm leaving the bad thing to go do the good thing, well, that language needs to stop.
Yeah.
For one thing, it just simply isn't true. But the more we say it, the more true it can become. But it's dualistic. That's yes. the big problem with most Christians' economics, is that it is latent dualism. I don't think they're intentional all the time, but we refer to it as this thing we do for ourselves, and then now it's time for me to go to my church, to my wife, to my children, to the kids' school, to the soccer games. And I would say the thing you say you're doing for yourself, you're not doing, it doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not transitively producing goods and services that meet the needs of others, that's what you're doing. Nobody is paying you to throw rocks up in the air and pick them back up again.
Yeah, dig the dish to fill it again. Right. Well, and that reminds me, you know, somewhat about, there's been a over the last 20 years or so, the discussions about like, what does it mean to have work-life separation? Not bringing your work back to the home and being the workaholic, that sort of stuff we've heard that, right? And it somewhat has struck me over those years that like, it seems like that in some respects, Christians have a problem of work-life separation, and that they, precisely in the way that you've kind of described there, which is that I'm leaving the bad thing to go do the good thing, as though their purpose is somehow divorced from the thing that they are doing 8 hours a day, potentially, or 40 hours a week, or whatever you end up, whatever that ends up becoming for you. And to think that their life is just juxtaposed like that is I think that's, in so many respects, that is the impetus for why one of the big reasons why this podcast even exists. And so and what we're trying to fight against in our own personal philosophy. So coming to a better understanding of that personally is just really important. That's crucial. And is there anything else that comes to mind there that is worthy to note to you?
Well, I think that the field of, you know, look, I put up a free economics course at Bahnsen.com mm-hmm. Where I taught a semester long course. I've done it now 5 different times to high school juniors and seniors. And we've had thousands upon thousands of adults take it, and some younger than that age group. It kind of depends on people's, you know, familiarity, comfort level. But I try to hit on the major points that I think matter to a believer, mm-hmm. you know, that a sort of economics 101 standpoint, understanding trade-offs, understanding that the intentions of economic policy do not dictate their propriety.
Yeah.
That if someone said that if someone says this policy intends to do good, therefore it must be good, that's not, you know, cogent Christian thinking. We can do better than that. And being able to understand trade-offs, to understand scarcity, that because that there is scarcity, but then there is also through our own ingenuity the potential for abundance, that we wrestle with this tension. And economics is fundamentally human action around the allocation of scarce resources. Yeah. And yet we have the ability to create a lot more abundance than we ever thought possible. And we have that ability because we were made in the image of God. So Christians should appreciate these things more than anyone else and never allow our thinking to limit economics to what so many people do, which is something statist. Economics is government policies around what we're allowed to do and not do. No, it isn't.
Yeah, I think that is a crucial point as well, is to recognize that the market is us. It is not what the government dictates. And there's some great work from Friedrich Hayek and others that really explain that it's the organic emergence of human actions together. So really appreciate that. And I hope that people will take a look at Bonson.com. And that's a free course that you've developed there that you can go and take at your leisure.
Yes, it sure is. And it's all pretty self-contained. There's 30 video lectures. There's a full syllabus, reading material, quizzes and tests and all that good stuff. So
awesome. Well, we'll make sure and include that in the show notes so that everybody can go take a look if they're up for it. So really, really appreciate that. Well, as we begin to kind of draw to a close, sir, I always like to ask a particular question of all our guests, which is, you know, if you've had a varied career, I for one would be really curious to unpack another time about your experiences in the Christian music business. That sounds hilarious and awesome. And I have my brother-in-law is involved in that a little bit, working with Keith and Karen Getty and others. But imagine, like, you know, you're going back in time. You've had this varied career. You want to be able to give your younger self some advice about how to come up in work and in business, and as a fellow believer, what kinds of things would you want to tell to kind of advise your younger self in that way? What to avoid mistakes or do something better? What kind of comes to mind there?
You probably won't be surprised to know that I've been asked this question a lot, and I always sort of have a similar impulse in the way I respond, which is to first point out that life doesn't really work that way. We don't get do-overs. But it's also a fair question because there's other people who haven't yet gone through a certain part of journey and they want to hear what you would or wouldn't do. And I get it. But I always want to point out the gravity of it is that it's a fun thing to reflect on. And maybe there's something beneficial I can share that'd be useful to others. But, you know, they're also are decisions we can make that we don't necessarily get do-overs on, that the decisions we make matter. And I say that so that people can think seriously, you know, young people in particular, they can make mistakes that can have serious consequences. And I don't just mean in their work life, I mean their personal life, you know, and decisions that we make and so forth. Look, if I could go back, a lot of the issues would just simply be matters of better judgment. I mean, I'm 51 now, and I'd like to think I have more maturity and wisdom than I did when I was 21. But I wish I had more maturity and wisdom when I was 21 and 24 and 27 and 28 and 33. And, you know,
and now.
and certainly now. But now I have enough maturity and judgment to know that I wish I had more maturity and judgment. And when I was younger, I knew less and thought I knew more. And as I'm older, I know more and think I know less. And so there is a sense in which just, you know, that zeal that you have when you're younger, it can be a really good thing, but it needs to be contained and constrained and have boundaries of humility, you know, and yet at the same time have confidence. When I say avoiding mistakes, I mean the big ones, you know, the lifestyle decisions that can really set one astray. But in your business life, you will make mistakes. And understanding that those can be very beneficial moments, but they don't feel like it at the time. But what we learn from mistakes we make become some of the best things we go through. And so I want people to feel at peace about the fact that every successful person in business or in their career had points in their journey where it didn't feel that way.
Yeah.
And that's okay. It's part of the deal. But it's to some degree part of the curse. There's some thorns and thistles with this stuff because sin entered the world. But I also believe that we have the ability to turn those ashes into beauty. And that's what we're supposed to be doing redemptively in our professional lives.
I can appreciate that because there's so much about even my own history of making mistakes if I hadn't made those mistakes, I wouldn't have learned and in certain ways that have enabled the types of productivity and achievements that I have now. So I think that is certainly a worthy reminder no matter what. Well, David, thank you so much for being here. Before we go, I'll give you the last word. If you want to say promote any of your other works or things that you want to make sure that people know about that you're doing, this is that time. I want to give you that opportunity.
Well, I appreciate it. We happen to talk about this economics class that if people are interested in. It's just a service for others. It's at bonson.com. And then if people are interested in my ongoing financial and economic and investment writing, that's all available at dividendcafe.com.
Which is indeed a great read. It's fun to read. I highly recommend subscribing. It's fun.
Well, thank you.
Well, thank you so much for being here, David. Again, really appreciate it. It's an honor to have you. And we hope that perhaps we'll bring you on board some of our other podcasts at some point or another, because I know you have so many interesting things to say. So once again, thanks, sir.
Thanks so much. God bless.
Well, this has been the Faith Ventures Podcast, everyone. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next time.